Shalom and welcome to On the House, the podcast where industry experts and professionals discuss real estate in Israel. I'm your host, Debbie Goldfischer, real estate agent, founder and editor-in-chief of buyitinisrael.com. Join us as we explore market trends, legal and tax issues, purchasing tips, neighborhoods throughout Israel, and much more. All this is On the House, helping you make the right move. Welcome, everybody, and thank you for joining us today for the next episode of On the House. This is the second episode of our fourth season, focusing on taxation related to real estate in Israel. Last week, we spoke with Yair Givati and explored the taxes involved in purchasing property, including Mas Rechisha, purchase tax, and VAT, which applies to both new construction prices and service fees in real estate transactions. Today, we'll be diving into the other side of the real estate timeline, on capital gains tax, a tax that is applied to the capital gains or the profits generated as a result of selling a property in Israel. For this episode, I'm excited to introduce our guest, Josh Portman. Josh was born and raised in Columbus, Ohio, and moved to Israel in 1990, where he has since lived with his wife, children, and grandchildren. With nearly 30 years of experience, Josh specializes in representing foreign residents, particularly from English-speaking countries, in real estate acquisitions, sales, and investments in Israel. He's well known for providing personalized service, ensuring every transaction is handled with care and tailored to the specific needs of his clients. Josh is the owner and managing partner of Portman Law Offices, a boutique real estate firm based in Jerusalem. So with that, Josh, thank you so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I have to say, Josh, I was recently in London and I met somebody at a shiva. We got talking and he told me that because of you, he managed to close the deal that he had, the apartment that he bought in Yerushalayim a few years ago. I think you know who I'm talking about.
That's nice to hear.
And he said it was only because of you that he was able to, because the sellers were quite complicated. From what I understand, it was a company.
They often are.
They often are. So well done. Before we get started, tell us a little bit about the market that you're seeing now in Yerushalayim and the buyers.
Well, it's interesting what we're seeing, which is, you know, fortunate and unfortunate. It's good for real estate attorneys who represent foreign residents. The growth of anti-Semitism abroad, October 7th, which very sad moment in Jewish history, has created, fortunately and unfortunately, a lot of noise and a lot of interest in investing and purchasing property in Israel. Some people as an exit strategy, and some people just because they see that the future of the Jewish people is in Israel and not in their home countries.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm seeing people who would never have thought about this previously are now taking the serious interest in not just buying something, but actually in moving to Israel. It's quite incredible. So, Josh, I'm excited for an insightful discussion today. So let's get started. Mas Shevach, capital gains tax. Tell us about it. What is this tax? When is it paid? And who takes care of it?
Well, capital gains tax is really similar to capital gains tax as it's applicable abroad as well. A capital gains tax is essentially a tax on the profits from a sale of a piece of real estate. When you sell a private home in Israel, residential real estate, capital gains tax sometimes applies and sometimes doesn't apply. And when you sell non-residential real estate, you're always going to have to pay capital gains tax. So I would stick to first and foremost to residential real estate. Capital gains tax, in the simplistic terms, is if a person bought for $1 million and sells for $2 million, they have to pay a tax on their profit. And it used to be, before 2014, that a person could buy a property for $100,000 and sell it for $10 million and would pay no tax. They could sell one residential property once every 4 years, to make things very simplistic, with no tax whatsoever.
Even if they owned
multiple properties. As long as they had not sold a property previously, you had an exemption from tax, even if you own multiple properties, once every 4 years. And if you only own one property, you could flip once every 18 months and no tax on the profit.
That was a great incentive for investors.
Exactly. Today, however, if you are a foreign resident that owns a property abroad, or if you are an Israeli owning a second property, you will pay 25% capital gains tax on the real gain from the sale of the property, from the first shekel of gain.
So even if you own something in Chutz Aretz, outside of Israel, then you're already considered to own multiple properties.
That is true. And if you don't own something in out of the country, the difficulty is proving to the Israeli tax authorities that you don't own something abroad. So there's also, they've put a ceiling on the capital gains tax as well. It used to be, like I said at the initial part of the conversation, person bought for X, sold for Y, no tax. As long as they hadn't sold within the previous 4 years or previous 18 months, depending on which exemption they were entitled to. However, today, the tax authorities said, wait a second, even if it's your primary residence, no matter what, if you bought for 3 million shekels and you sold up to 5 million 8,000 shekels, which is the ceiling, on that delta of profit, the 2 million shekel profit, you wouldn't pay any tax on it if it's your sole apartment and you're a full-time Israeli resident, or if you're a foreign resident that can prove that you don't own residential real estate abroad. And so on that, it would be exempt from tax.
So they look at the sale price, not the profit amount.
They look at the price that you paid for it, plus all your expenses. And I'm going to get into a little bit of a technicality in a second, but they look at the purchase price plus expenses on the purchase and on the sale, and the sale price minus what your original purchase price plus your expenses, you pay 25% tax on that profit.
But what is the threshold? You said above a certain point.
Yeah. So if a person bought an apartment, for example, for 2.5 million shekels 4 years ago, and it's their only apartment, and they sell today for 4.5 million shekels, then they would pay no capital gains tax on the profit. There are certain exemptions to that if apartment has building rights, which is not residential real estate you're selling, but you're selling the right to build. It's a different story. But to make things simple also, as a general rule of thumb, it's purchase price plus expenses, then sale price plus expenses minus purchase price plus expenses times 25% capital gains
tax. Okay, we're going to come to the calculation, but yeah. I just want to make sure I've understood. This threshold above which you do have to pay, they're looking at the sale price, or they're looking at, what are they?
They're looking at the sale price. For example, let's say you bought for...
What is that threshold? What's the
5,800,000 shekels. So if you buy in a place which is worth more than 5,800,000 shekels, you have no exemption from tax. If you bought now, a person buys an apartment for 5.5 million shekels, they'll pay capital gains tax regardless, whether that's their only apartment. There's no exemption whatsoever.
But they'll pay capital gains only on the portion above that 5.8 million or on the entire...
I'm going to make things even more clear. The 5,800,000 shekels, what they said is like this. If a person can afford to buy a house for 5.5 million shekels, they can afford to pay capital gains tax on the sale of the unit. So the 5,800,000 shekels, what it's referring to is if I bought 5 years ago for 2 million shekels and I sell today for 5,200,000 shekels, I will pay no tax on the profit from 2 million to 5,800,000. And on the difference between 5,800,000 and the 200,000 shekels, on that 200,000 shekels, I'll pay 25%.
Understood. Okay, great. And going back to sole residency or the only home, it's interesting that last week, as I mentioned, we spoke to Yair Givati about mas rechisha, purchase tax. And there, we only look at the sole residence if they own in Israel. If they own outside of Israel, they're not considered to have an additional home.
As far as purchase tax is concerned, and this is my understanding, and I'm pretty sure it's accurate, is that with regards to purchase tax, if it's a second home or if you live abroad, you're automatically at the 8% threshold. It doesn't matter whether you own something abroad.
But an Israeli, if an Israeli owns another property overseas, does that count as...
I don't believe so, but in purposes of capital gains tax, it would.
That's my point.
Yeah, for purposes of capital gains tax,
so
it would.
It's interesting.
It would. If it's a residential property, it would.
Okay. I hope that's clear.
Whether the government would know about it is another
question.
That's
another thing.
But as a general rule of thumb, for capital gains tax purposes, it has to be your sole property. It's an interesting question because typically speaking, what they're looking at is if it's a foreigner buying, the foreigner is always looked at as having a second house, even though he may or may not. It's the burden of proof is on the foreigner to prove that he owns no other residential real estate.
Got it.
When it comes to capital gains tax, an Israeli, if they own a sole residence in Israel and have residential real estate that they own abroad, it's a good question. I'm not 100% certain about the answer to that.
Okay, fine. So when is the mas shevach, when is this tax paid?
It's very similar to purchase tax. You sign a contract, you make the calculation as to what the tax would be, and you have to pay it within 60 days of the time that you sign the purchase contract.
Got it.
There are other rules also, whether you might have to deduct at the source, but I'm not going to get into that. That's more technical stuff that if people have questions about when they're buying a property, how do you protect a buyer from potential capital gains tax that a seller may have, because taxes do go with the property and they would prevent registration of the name of the flat in the name of the buyer if the seller doesn't pay his capital gains tax. So there are ways to protect the buyer in various scenarios to actually pay the seller's capital gains tax and deduct it from the purchase price.
Yeah. Got it. And I'm assuming that like Mas Rechisha is the lawyer, the attorney that takes care of this tax.
Yes. Sometimes people, if they have very complicated tax calculations that they want to make, because there are a lot of intricacies when it comes to capital gains tax that one has to take into consideration. There are things like depreciation and all kinds of things that could affect your tax base for purposes of how much profit you're making.
And who makes these calculations?
So sometimes, like as a general rule of thumb, I do most of the calculations myself, but there are sometimes more complicated transactions that people will take an accountant, or there are special attorneys that only do tax stuff.
Right.
It could be VAT. It could be mas shevach issues, capital gains tax issues.
Sure. Shamayim as well. Yeah. Appraisers can also do this sometimes.
Betterment tax issues. And sometimes they'll just have an external source do that, because you also want to try to maximize whatever expenses you may have in order to offset the tax.
So just in simple terms, let's just go back to the calculation. So you're saying you take the purchase price, you take the sale price, you look at the difference, which is the profit, you deduct all of the expenses, depreciation, I'm assuming inflation as well.
Yes. So it's interesting. That's a really nice point that you made, because people are used to it. Like abroad, if you bought a house for $500,000 and you sold for $1 million, you'd pay capital gains tax on the $500,000. And Israel doesn't work that way. And this is a benefit that you have when you buy in Israel. If I would have bought a house 5 years ago in Israel for $1 million and I sold today, but there's a stepped up basis for inflation. So what does it mean? It means that I take the $1 million, and if inflation was 10%, it means my base for purposes of capital gains tax is $1,100,000.
Right.
So even though I technically might have an inflationary gain, if I sold for $1,500,000 and I bought for $1 million, I would have a gain of $500,000. The Israeli tax office recognizes that whatever you paid for it plus your expenses are linked to inflation, and they give
you a
step
up. So it brings down your profit.
It brings down your profit.
And another important point is, I'm assuming that we're looking at the shekel value, not the dollars.
Correct.
Not pounds, because in the other currencies you may make a bigger profit or a smaller profit. We're looking at the shekel.
And that can often also have a bearing on people that are just buying investment properties in Israel, because sometimes there are tax treaties between most of the countries, the UK, the United States, whereas if you pay tax here, you get a credit towards tax abroad. So if the tax in Israel would be less than the tax abroad, then you have to pay the difference. And sometimes you could have a profit in the United States, for example. You paid $500,000, which with the time when the shekel was at 3, you know, and then you sold for $1 million and it was at 4. And it can go the other way as well.
Sure.
Saying you have situations where the shekel profit is very little, but the dollar profit is very big. So you pay very little tax in Israel, but you might still have to pay more abroad.
So interesting. So, yeah. Okay, so we take the difference between the purchase price, the sale price, we look at the profit and take off all the various deductions, and then the tax is 25% of that profit, correct?
Right, 25% of your real gain.
Of your real gain. Is it ever more or less than 25%, or is it always 25%?
In residential real estate, that's what it is.
Okay, well, is the focus of this podcast.
So,
on the house.
Yeah, so on a house, it's 25%. The tax is 25%. Sometimes it can be a little bit less, because it depends on how long you've held the property.
Okay.
There were different tax rates many years ago, and also sometimes the rate can be less for a very simple reason. Let's say you bought a property in 2000. When capital gains tax exemption still existed.
Right.
So let's say I bought for $1 million in 2000 and I sell today in 2024 for $2 million. So the period from 2000 until December 31st, 2013 is exempt from tax. Mm-hmm. And then they prorate the capital gains tax from January 1st, 2014 until the date of sale.
This is what we call the linear tax rate.
Yeah, okay. Linear tax rate.
Okay. So they basically take only the portion from January 1st, 2014
right.
until the date of sale. And how do they make
the
calculation?
Your effective tax rate would be like this. What we do is we take the number of days that have passed since the time of the sale, And then what we do is we save January 1st, 2000 until December 31st, 2013, you have 5,000 days. So 5,000 days is exempt. And then you have another 5,000 days from January 1st, 2014 until the date of sale. And what they do is you divide the amount of days, the amount of days that were exempt divided by the total amount of days. And then that will give you the percentage of what.
So if it's, let's just say,
if 50% of the period is exempt and 50% of the period is not exempt, it means your effective tax rate would be about 12 to 12.5%.
Understood. Okay. That's very clear. So let's take an example of somebody who owns one home in Israel and they sell it for less than 5,008,000 shekels. How long do they have to hold it for? Is there a holding period?
There is a holding period.
A required holding period.
18 months.
18 months. So you can't just buy something, see that goes up, flip it, and sell.
You have to hold it for a minimum of 18 months.
Do you have to live in the home?
No.
Okay.
No.
And what about if somebody holds a portion of a property? You and your brother own something together, for example.
So let's put it this way, that as a general rule of thumb, if you own less than a third of a property, it's not deemed to be an additional property. So if, let's say, I owned a third of an apartment, less than a third, and I owned another full 100% of a house, and I wanted to sell that house that I own 100% of, and it was I can treat that as my sole house, even though I own a portion.
Even though you own a portion.
As long as it's less than the threshold.
Okay, that's similar to mas rechisha as well.
It's not deemed to be an extra house as far as the tax purposes.
Okay, makes sense. And what happens when you own a home and then you buy something that's being built, but it's going to take a while for it to be ready? So in the meantime, you're still living in your old home, you're going to sell it. How does that work?
That's an excellent question.
Now you
own
two
general
properties.
Rule of thumb, and let's say you own a singular apartment, which is below the threshold, you're exempt from tax.
Mm-hmm.
If you were buying a secondhand apartment, you would have to sell your current house within 18 months of the purchase of the second apartment.
Right.
If you buy an apartment on paper,
which a lot of people are doing today,
building period is not taken into consideration. You have to sell within 12 months of the date that you were supposed to get possession of the apartment.
Okay, that's really good to know, because many people are buying today off plan.
Right.
And because of the war, the slowdowns is less.
You have 12 months from the time that the construction is completed. I mean, that's simplistic, obviously.
Right.
I don't want to say this is legal advice. Any questions that would come up, anyone who's listening to the podcast should consult their local
solicitor. We'll include Josh's information in the show notes for sure. Any questions about specific scenarios? You have to consult with Josh or with a lawyer, but in general, you have 12 months from when you take possession of the apartment.
If the replacement apartment is something which is not yet built.
Uh-huh. What happens if you buy something that's an older apartment, it's secondhand, but you're going to do a major renovation on it? It's going to take a while.
Not relevant.
Interesting. Okay. That's good to know. So going back to non-residents, and we know what a non-resident is. It's somebody who could actually be Israeli, but you live abroad. So they are, no matter what, they get no rights, no benefits.
No, so just like what I said at the beginning of the conversation, if the Israeli doesn't own anything abroad and can prove to the Israeli tax office that he doesn't own anything, and he bought an apartment in Israel that he wants to sell and has held it for 18 months,
mm-hmm.
then they would have be entitled to an exemption up to the ceiling.
Okay, but what about a non-resident, a foreigner who owns something here? And
so a foreigner owns something that I also alluded to that before. It's they would have to prove that they own nothing abroad. If they own a residential house abroad, it could be an apartment, it could mm-hmm. be a house, but it is a residential property abroad, then they would be deemed to be like an Israeli who owns a second home, or a foreigner that has a property abroad. They're not entitled to any tax benefits when they sell. They have to pay full capital gains tax.
So what about a non-resident who doesn't own anything abroad?
So typically speaking, what the Israel tax office requests is you have to bring them proof that you do not own anything abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can bring them proof that you don't own anything abroad and you fit the 18-month criteria and the apartment that you're selling is below the threshold of where you don't have to pay capital gains tax, then you would get the same exemption that an Israeli mm-hmm. who has a singular home in Israel.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And I can tell you the only time I've been successful doing it is a really funny story. And I don't know if I was really successful, but just to allude to this is that I had clients that sold a place in the German colony and I filed for an exemption over the ceiling. And the tax office, by rule of thumb, they have to finish the file within 8 months of the time that you complete the file the transaction.
Okay.
The file was open, and the clerk that it fell on is someone who's always late in finishing the files. So what happened was, these were people that live abroad, mm-hmm. and I gave them an accountant's letter saying that they don't own anything abroad, which they really didn't own any real estate abroad. And I guess because we got to the wire, that she had no choice but to just pass it through. So they got the exemption. Now,
them.
That being said, I've had other scenarios where I wasn't successful, that I brought the accountant's letter. They want an official document from the U.S. government saying this person doesn't own real estate. There's no such animal. So it's very difficult. There are countries which will say, Mr. Schwartz, passport number so-and-so, on our records has no real estate in his name.
Like Israel. Israel could do that.
Yeah, but the United States doesn't have something like that. But we were able to do it. I showed them a rental contract, and it was the only time I've ever passed it through.
Unbelievable. That's great. Okay. I'm curious to know, do you think that since the exemption for this tax was canceled, do you think that this has had an effect on property investors in Israel? Because at the end of the day, that's the reason, correct me if I'm wrong, the reason that they canceled this exemption for investors, or second homeowners, was to stop people from investing.
Speculating.
Exactly.
Yeah, to do flips.
And also to try and bring the prices down of housing, right, because so many young couples here in Israel can't afford. Do you think that this mechanism worked?
I think that sometimes it has an immediate effect, but I think in the long run, people just get used to things. Like, we always thought that, like, when they raised the purchase tax to 8% for foreigners or for people buying a second home, that they would stop buying. But people always say, I'm doing a pre-sale, I'm doing this. Even if I have 13 or 14% closing costs, the apartment's going to go up in 50 or 100% in value. And if I have to pay taxes, I have to pay taxes. On my end, I would say a majority of my clients are buying because they just want to have something in Israel. They're not a lot of people that are flipping apartments, so to speak. Some are. And I would say that as a result, there are people that buy across the green line, because across the green line in certain places, as a general rule of thumb, there's no purchase tax, no capital gains tax, if you're a non-citizen and a non-resident.
Right, right. But on the other hand, I've met people who say that they want to make Aliyah, they want to buy something, but in the meantime, they're going to buy something as an investment property. And that's all very well and good, but they have to understand that there are closing costs at the entry and at the exit, and you have to take that all into account. So it's not like you're just buying a pair of trousers, as I say, and then you're going to return it.
Right?
There are a lot of expenses, and if you're not going to hold it for 18 months, then you really could get hit with taxes, especially the way that things are going in this market, that the prices are just going higher and higher, and then the profits will obviously be there. But you'll have to pay tax on that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the deductions and expenses that people should take into account when making this calculation. What sort of things can they include in this?
Okay, so we'll take the big items, and then we'll go to the smaller items.
Okay.
The big items are obviously the purchase price. And that's your biggest deduction, so to speak. I mean, mm-hmm. that's your base for the purchase.
Right, you're not paying tax on the purchase price.
No. And then you've got purchase tax, mas rechisha, acquisition tax, which also is added onto your base.
Mm-hmm.
Payment to the real estate broker, who's a really quintessential, one of the most important people in the transaction, because they find you the place that you're going to ultimately buy.
We hope so.
Right, exactly. And then you've got the legal fees. And if the property is an investment property and you're renting it out, then you can also add on the mortgage interest as part of your expenses. For all those years. Now, the one thing you have to take into consideration, and this is something people are not aware of, and I'm going to try to explain this. It's very difficult on a podcast to explain this because it's of tricky, that if a property is rented out, the person who is renting out the property loses about 2.7% of the value of the property every year. You can do
depreciation.
Depreciation.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person rented out a property for 10 years and they bought for $1 million, they lose somewhere between $200,000 to $220,000 in depreciation.
Even though the value of the property has gone up, but the value of the internal property has probably gone down. Wear and tear on the
No, but the depreciation is different. Like, let's say, for example, if I rent out a flat and I have to declare the income from the rent, the tax office, there are two ways of paying rental tax to the Israeli governmental authorities. One is you just pay a flat 10% rental tax to mm-hmm. the government, and you can't expense anything. The other way is that you file a regular Israeli income tax return. And in that scenario, you can also take your depreciation allowance. You get 2.7% of the base. So if you earn 100,000 shekels a year and you had depreciation of 80,000 shekels, you only pay tax on 20,000 shekels.
Got it.
But what ends up happening is if it's rented out, whether you took advantage of the depreciation allowance or not, and this may change also, but you lose between 2 to 2.7% of your base every year in terms of, for purposes of capital gains tax. Mm-hmm. So if I bought an apartment, like I said, for $1 million, and I sell it 2 years after I bought it, my base is already going to be million minus 54,000.
Interesting.
I mean, just to make things, that's making
understood.
It simple.
Okay.
But so that's something another... someone has to take into consideration. If they used it for their own personal use throughout the period, then there's no depreciation deduction of the base. But that's something that's like, it becomes when a person is thinking about selling, we can go through all the numbers and everything. So you've got brokerage, legal, purchase tax. Those are your big expenses. And then there's also capital improvements. Let's say a person bought a place that he put in a lot of
upgrades and finishings.
Exactly.
Air conditioning, kitchen.
Yeah. So things that are physically attached. Just if he sells a place with movable furniture, that's technically not a deduction.
I see.
So what people sometimes do, and it's completely legal, but sometimes they don't like to put it in the tax office's face, what they'll do is they'll say, I'm selling the apartment for $1 million and I'm selling my furnishings for another $150,000.
I see.
And so the sale price is $1 million and the furnishings is a separate contract and paid separately.
Mm. So it's super important to hold on to receipts.
Yeah. It's critical. I mean, the tax office, what people do when there used to be an automatic exemption, many people didn't save the receipts. So as such, they would have to bring in an appraiser to bring an appraisal to the tax office to try to prove what they did.
25 years later.
Yeah, 25 years later. And then the tax office automatically says, well, you don't have receipts, so we're going to already deduct from that 17% or whatever the VAT et cetera.
Can the receipts all be saved digitally?
They
scanned?
Can be saved digitally. Yes.
You don't need the originals?
You don't need the originals because we file digitally in any event. Everything's
amazing.
Done online today.
Okay. What about VAT on the purchase price? Is that included in the profit? Can we take that off?
Yeah. I mean, well, when you buy on paper,
right?
If you buy for $1 million or let's say if you buy for 1 million shekels, the VAT is part of that price.
Okay.
So that's definitely something that's...
So you're not paying tax on the profit.
It'd be the opposite. You can include the VAT in your tax base. So if you sell it to a secondhand person without VAT, your base would be on the purchase price, including the VAT.
I see. So that would bring down your profit.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Anything else we should take into account?
Yeah. I mean, you also can expense everything on the sale end as well. So you can expense your brokerage commission when you sell, your legal fees when you sell.
Capital gains.
But you can, like if, let's say, for example, you paid betterment tax. Betterment tax is not capital gains tax, but let's say, for example, you changed the zoning and you were able to add an addition onto your flat. You added another 30 meters. You paid the municipality 150,000 shekels for that betterment tax. You mm-hmm. can expense that as well.
I see. Tell us a little bit about that betterment tax. We call it Hetel Hashbacha.
Hetel Hashbacha, yeah.
It's an improvement levy.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
So as a general rule of thumb, betterment tax is like this. When a building is constructed originally, there is a zoning scheme in place. The zoning scheme allows for a certain amount of meters to be built on that construction site.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, for example, 15 years later, your apartment's getting small. Your neighbors also want to make bigger apartments. You get together, you proceed with an architect, you pursue to do a change in the zoning scheme. Sometimes there's also a change in zoning scheme that the municipality initiates as well, because they say we want to have, there's a big, big lot here. You can add space and they want to make some more money also.
Sure.
So they initiate it. So what happens is like this, is let's say you get together with your neighbors and you're successful and you can add 50 meters onto every single apartment
okay.
in the building.
Okay.
So what happens in that scenario is the municipality says, okay, well, you now have an apartment, which is 100 meters that you can turn into 150 meters.
You don't get anything for free.
So the area can charge you what is called a betterment tax. And there are certain rules behind this as well. What's considered to trigger betterment tax is two things. One is either you ask for a building permit
mm-hmm.
on those new rights.
Yes, you use the rights.
You
basically.
Use the rights or you sell the apartment. If you sell the apartment, even if you have not yet constructed, asked for a permit, that also triggers betterment tax.
I would say because both of those triggers, you're benefiting from the rights.
Exactly.
You're either selling it at a higher price because it's... you've got those rights,
right.
or you're using them
Exactly.
So you're taxed on that benefit.
Right. So betterment tax, how does it work? What they do is they say, let's say, for example, a zoning scheme was passed in 2024. They look to see what was the price per meter, a built meter in Rehavia.
Mm-hmm.
So they say 60,000 shekels. So that means for every meter extra that you get, and I'm being very simplistic because there are certain deductions they give you because, you know, it might be like the ability to take advantage of the building rights and all different kinds of things. But for example, if you got an extra 50 meters in Rehavia, you'd be paying 1.5 million shekels for the betterment tax.
50% on the value
of an unbuilt meter.
Of an unbuilt meter. Wow. Right. That's a lot of money.
50% of the value of a built meter. Sorry. Of a built meter.
It's a lot of money.
Yes.
So you're saying 60,000 shekel per square meter, take half of that. 30,000 shekels just for the rights.
Just for the right.
To enjoy these extra meters.
So you could say to yourself, if I can add another 50 meters onto my apartment, that's like another 3 bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 bedrooms in Rehavia is worth quite a bit of money. It's worth a lot more than...
Before you even build, before you even bring the builder and actually build the bedrooms, you have to pay 50% of the worth of them. It's unbelievable. Right. So again, the owner has to pay this when he uses those rights, or when he sells his property.
Exactly.
And it's always the owner of the home or the seller of the home who pays. If I buy from a seller, I don't have to pay
it. You don't have to pay it, but you probably are paying it because the seller is usually taking into consideration.
He's adding it onto the purchase price, which is why I'm bringing it into this episode, because we're talking about the sale of a property.
Right.
Okay, so that's super important. And I think, as we can hear, it's very important, as always, to engage with a real estate lawyer who can help you, because there are so many intricacies and so many, I wouldn't say loopholes, but there are many different ways that things can be interpreted and calculated. And obviously, you need somebody on your side who's going to do it in your interest.
And in general, consultants as well. Appraisers sometimes, if you're buying a home, which is something which is sitting on a plot of land, and you want to make sure that everything conforms to the building permits. Are there actually ability to add on space? And even before you sell, you also want to consider, like, what am I going to be in for? You might even say, I'll take an appraiser to determine what my
potential exposure is on
betterment tax, hetzel hashbacha, as well as capital gains tax and all the various sundry expenses that you may have.
Sure. It's all about building the right team. There's so many different components to the journey, and everybody needs people at different stages that can provide them with the right expertise. So I think this has been a really interesting discussion. Cover the main aspects of the taxation that's involved on the sale of a property. Before we end, Josh, I'd like to ask you 2 questions. Where in Israel do you live, and what do you love most about it?
I live in Harnof.
In Yerushalayim.
Yes.
Beautiful.
And I love being in Jerusalem. I mean, certainly the weather is one of the contributory factors.
Absolutely.
And the spirituality, obviously.
Amazing.
And
that's lucky,
like,
you.
The center of the world. What can I say?
How long have you lived here for?
34 years.
In Harnof?
I've lived in Harnof for 31 years.
Amazing. Where did you start before that?
I was in Kiryat Moshe.
Also in Yerushalayim, not so far.
Yes. I've always been in Yerushalayim.
Very nice. So my next question is, if you were to move to a different part of the country or different part of the city, where would you go? And why?
I would probably move to Ramat Sharet, which is next to Bayit Vegan, because I have a daughter and son-in-law and grandchildren that live there.
How lovely.
I have children that live outside of Jerusalem as well, but I would say, like, once you're in Jerusalem, it's hard to leave.
How beautiful. And that's where you would go?
Most likely, I would say.
Your wife too?
Yeah, definitely.
Beautiful.
Definitely.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Josh. This has been such a pleasure. As I said, I will leave Josh's contact information in the show notes. If anybody wants to reach out, by all means, go ahead and do so. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Debbie, for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening to On the House. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and share it with your family and friends. You can also visit buyitinisrael.com, where you can find news, market updates, guidance, and much more on real estate in Israel. That's buyitinisrael.com. buyitinisrael.com. If you have a question or a specific topic you'd like us to cover on this podcast, please email us at the address you'll find at the bottom of the show notes. Whether you're thinking about Aliyah, looking for a home or a haven, or wanting to support the Israeli economy, now is the time to buy it in Israel.